Brought to you by the Small Business Payments Alliance. According to a new survey, an overwhelming majority of small business owners oppose additional government regulations on the electronic payment system, as called for in the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. Don't let Durbin-Marshall pile new mandates on Main Street small businesses. Learn more at smallbusinesspaymentsalliance.com.
TikTok, abortion, IVF. Three of the biggest issues roiling American politics right now, and Kellyanne Conway is in the middle of all three of them. You will remember that Kellyanne has been advising Donald Trump and Mike Pence for years, but lately she's been best known for urging the GOP to leave TikTok alone and moderate the party message on reproductive rights. I had a spirited conversation with Kellyanne this week at Politico's Healthcare Summit, where we did our first live taping of this show. I'm Ryan Lizza, and this is Playbook Deep Dive. Kellyanne, welcome. Thank you for
doing
this.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone.
Let's, just to set the stage for our conversation, we're headed into a rematch between former President Trump and President Joe Biden, and the politics of healthcare will be central in this campaign, and whoever wins this election, healthcare policy will surely be central to the next White House. Kellyanne, you were President Trump's campaign manager, his counselor in the White House, and you were also in charge of some aspects of healthcare policy in the White House. And you've been doing an enormous amount of work in this political cycle on healthcare strategizing and politics. So can't think of a better person to help us figure out politics and policy of healthcare in 2024. But before we get to all of that, I do want to talk about and ask you about one question, news of the day, that is related to healthcare, and that is what the House did in this overwhelming vote to potentially ban TikTok, which is a national security challenge to the supporters of this bill, but also many see it as a healthcare problem. Phone addiction for kids and the addictive algorithms that sort of run a lot of our kids' lives, at least my kids. You worked on this. You are advising Republicans in the House not to support this bill. And you helped, I think, convince Donald Trump to oppose this. So just quickly, tell us a little bit about your role in that and what you made of the vote.
Sure. Well, President Trump makes up his own mind. He has spoken for himself through a Truth Social post a week ago and through an interview with CNBC's Squawk Box Monday, Ryan, where he very clearly said an empowered and emboldened Mark Zuckerberg, who President Trump believes interfered with the 2020 elections through $500 million in Zuckerbucks going to two nonprofits and then going out to get out the vote and do some other things. He feels that if Zuckerberg or even another social media company consolidates that power, we're creating tech barons by having Mark Zuckerberg potentially in charge of Facebook and Instagram and now TikTok, that would not be good. The other thing that President Trump has pointed out is the sheer number of users. I've seen up to 170 million quoted as the figure, U.S. users monthly. And as President Trump said on Monday, his belief that you have a lot of young people in there, a lot of females, a lot of voters who they like it. And it's not just for entertainment. Maybe it started out that way. There's a lot of connection and community on TikTok. But also, I just want to make very clear. TikTok is could be a national security threat. There's no question. And I personally want to hold China to account for any number of things. I think we should be holding China to account. But this is where we're starting. We don't have them confirming the origins of the COVID virus that killed over 1 million people in this country and many millions more worldwide. We're not telling them to get their fentanyl the hell out of our country and our kids' veins, the number one killer of 18 to 45-year-olds as we sit here in this country. We're not worried about the persecution of the religious minority, the Uyghurs. We're not worried about forced technology transfer. So we asked that question. We did some polling, not on this bill, but on an outright ban prior to that. And where you, as Americans, where you stand on whether or not to ban TikTok has an awful lot to do with where you sit on the spectrum of users. If you're a TikTok user, you don't want that to happen. Obviously, if you don't use it, you say, who cares? Not realizing there's a slippery slope.
President Trump was obviously for banning TikTok when he was in the White House. My question is, you've written recently in the New York Times a list of potential VP candidates that you recommended. The first name on that list, a lot of people, but the first one was Tom Cotton. Tom Cotton said recently that he would not meet with the head of TikTok's parent company, just as he would not meet with the head of Hamas or the Taliban. So a couple questions. One, Republicans in the House did not listen to Donald Trump on this issue, obviously. Most of them supported the bill. But how big an issue is this for Trump, as far as you can tell? In other words, do you think it's a deal breaker for, say, a vice presidential candidate like Tom Cotton?
No, it's not. It's not. There's a lot to unpack there, so let me try to do it quickly. And number one, when President Trump stated in August of 2020 that if Congress put it on his desk, he would ban TikTok or he would strip it from U.S. app stores. He made very clear on Squawk Box, but Congress didn't do that. He said, I like the people, they're nice people, but they don't work that hard, and they don't always do a lot, and it never came to his desk. Since then, he has seen how many users there are. He holds China to account in different ways, like saying to Xi Jinping at the G20 in Buenos Aires, Argentina, on December 1st, 2018, you need to schedule fentanyl. You need to get it out. And so they scheduled fentanyl.
He's got a
10% tariff on China that he'd like to do. He looks at taking them on in a larger package. He's very clear on how he would take on China.
He was very clear previously on this, that he would take them on this, and then he's reversed himself.
Right, but he hasn't reversed himself. I disagree with that.
At the time,
they were looking for U.S. owners. At the time, I was part of those discussions. I can name the two big companies, but you could figure it out. I was probably written about at the time. There are two big companies.
Microsoft was one of them.
Yeah. Trying to buy it.
But how is that not a reversal?
Well, how is it a reversal for him to say U.S. ownership? I think it's also a matter of priority. How did this just appear so quickly to be the biggest priority? And they did not listen to him. He didn't tell them to vote against the ban. I don't know a single member of Congress that Donald Trump called and said, please vote against this ban. I don't think that's true. But I think we ought to have the facts. And he essentially focused on Zuckerberg and creating a major tech baron here as someone he thinks, after 2016, when we utilized Facebook and Google and YouTube and you name it, because we didn't have money that Hillary had, Ron DeSantis spent 9 figures in Iowa to
win.
Hold on, this is important, but we spent 9 figures to beat her. We didn't have money for ads, so we utilized social media. And I think Zuckerberg took a lot of heat in Silicon Valley and everywhere else in polite company, being blamed for Donald Trump's election. And, you know, since then has gone back. This kind of Zuckerberg money has been banned in 17 or 18 states since 2020.
Let's talk about an easier issue that's more related to healthcare, and that is abortion. This morning, Neera Tanden was here this morning. She said on the stage that the Biden administration will make freedom and rights a core part of his agenda in the campaign, and reproductive freedom is a core part of that. And then she took a swipe at you guys. She said, the moderate position on the other side is a nationwide ban. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Did she say the word abortion? I'm going to think she didn't. There's a reason for that. There's a reason President Biden didn't say the word abortion in his State of the Union last week. Say the word. Just say the word. Is it an ugly word? Do you not want to own it? Say the word. Because here's what I think. I'm very realistic on this. I think that we should show compassion. We should reflect consensus, and then I think that that also requires concession. So I am 1,000% pro-life. I understand why people, including close family members of mine, are pro-choice, and I respect them and love them. I don't think that we should have 4 states in this country, very populous states, that have abortion well after the 30th, 34th week. Babies are being born in those states, in those same states, at 23 weeks, 24 weeks, 25 weeks. And that's an example I like to give because we couldn't have this conversation 10, 15, 30 years ago, where these babies are being born prematurely, surviving and thriving. So I would challenge people like Neera and others on that side who can't even say the word abortion. I would challenge them to explain why you can't come to a point where babies are being born. I would ask Vice President Harris. I can name 3 babies in her state of California that were born at a long before she thinks abortion should still be legal. Can we get to the point where those three individuals, the only ones I know about, there are probably many more, are citizens of California like she is, are part of the census of California like she is? Can we just stop being science deniers? The baby is waving back at you, it's sucking its thumb, and that's the male organ. Stop pretending you don't know what you see on a sonogram. So I disagree that there's a nationwide ban. There could be a federal minimum standard of 15 weeks. 15 weeks is second trimester. The woman knows she's pregnant. The baby can feel pain, according to nonpartisan doctors and scientists. And it's a good way to just have the conversation in a post-Dobbs world. I'll tell you what.
Do you think Trump should come out for a 15-week ban?
Well, it's a national minimum standard, and it's not a ban. And he has said, I think he told Sean Hannity a couple weeks ago when they were at the border, he was looking at that. He's also said 16 weeks or 4 months. But remember, as president, he had committed to signing into law a 20-week. What's changed is the nonpartisan doctors and scientists have shown evidence of an unborn fetus, a fetus feeling pain at 15 weeks. But I think that to show concession and consensus is really the way to go. So if you ask people, are you pro-life or pro-choice, you're not getting any of the story at this point. When you ask them granularly, which of the following reflects your personal view on abortion, and you give them choices, I don't want abortion ever, should always be illegal or prohibited. That's a very small number of Americans now, about 9%. It used to be as high as 14, it's 9%. Then you overlay that, I'm for abortion in cases of rape or incest conceptions, I'm for abortion in cases to save a life of the mother, sometimes birth defects, not past the first trimester or first 3 months. This is important because 71% of the country, I know, but you're asking big questions and then you want me to give you a soundbite. I'm not going to do that.
You're a political strategist. You're supposed to like tie these up.
I can do that, but that just disrespects a very complicated issue in our country
right
now.
Just one question, because I want to get to IVF. How would you advise a
TikTok abortion IVF.
A Republican candidate who genuinely believes that an embryo is a human life, and how would you advise them to talk about this issue of IVF? You have some pro-life activists, including in Alabama recently, who are very upset with the Republican legislature and governor for this legislation that protects IVF. You've been very outspoken that Republicans need to be in that place. IVF is obviously overwhelmingly...
Be in the place of pro-IVF,
protecting IVF. How do you advise a Republican candidate who genuinely says, you know what, Kellyanne, I believe an embryo is a human life?
I know a few people like that. I don't know many. I know you always want them to be the rule, not the exception. But what happened in Alabama
activists in Alabama.
I think what happened in Alabama... And well, let's talk about the legislators and the governor of Alabama and what they did to protect.
You don't know anyone who believes that life starts at conception?
No, I know many people who believe that. You're
talking
about embryos.
Embryos are a human life?
Right. I don't know if you want to argue with me, if you want me to answer the question. But here's the answer. Here's what actually happened. There was a case by the Supreme Court in Alabama. They came. It was a wrongful death action. Two couples wanted to sue for wrongful death because three embryos were accidentally and tragically destroyed. The only way you can sue for wrongful death is if a death occurred. The only way death occurs is if a life is taken. The Supreme Court ruled, and there's probably a lot of people in this room who are hearing that for the first time because God forbid the media would actually cover the facts of the case. But they ruled, and what happened next is important because what happened next is President Trump came out the next day, within the next 24 or 48 hours. He put on Truth Social on February 23rd. You can read it. He put it in his remarks the same day in South Carolina. You can read it. That we should be encouraging people who want to bring life into this world. We should help them in any way we can to create life and to bring life into this world. And that if you're pro-life, you want to be pro-life for the child's entire life. But hold on. He said that. The NRSC put out a memo quoting our polling, and I think that apart from our polling in there that showed 86% of women, 85% of all Americans support increasing access to in vitro fertilization and other fertility-related treatments, that's really changed in opinion over time. And that included the vast majority of evangelical Christians, of pro-life respondents, of Republicans, of conservatives. So talk about something that has tripartisan consensus, not even bipartisan. And then the governor, Kay Ivey of Alabama, is pro-life. She came out, the legislature came out, and they're protecting your ability to have IVF and other fertility-related treatments in Alabama. I thought that was
a great
example.
Other places are going the other way. Like in Iowa, the State House just passed something that could criminalize IVF, potentially.
I haven't read that, so I can't comment on that.
But as a strategist, as someone who wants Republicans to win, how do you advise that Republican candidate who believes life begins at conception and believes that these embryos are a human life, then destroying them is murder? What do you say, how do you tell them to talk about this issue?
Well, they should say, I am pro-life, and here's what that means. They should just say, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are our first rights. The first one is life. Here's what and then I tell them, I wrote this actually this morning for a client. Then you say, I have close people to me, family members and friends who are pro-choice, and I love them and I respect their opinion. And when I hear them say why they're pro-choice, they sound an awful lot like pro-lifer sometimes. They'll say, I'm pro-choice because I believe that abortion should be available for people who have been raped or incested, or in cases to save the life of the mother. And maybe I'll even throw in there, not past the first trimester. Hold on. Early on. And then you have people who say, I'm pro-life, and say the exact same thing. I'm pro-life, except here are my exceptions. Here's what I would tell the pro-lifers to say. Say to somebody very politely, very calmly, and very respectfully in your life who disagrees with you on this issue. Say to them, you know what? You're always saying you're pro-life. What are your exceptions? What are your exceptions? And I think we should turn it around and say, you show me your exceptions and I'll show you mine. And then the pro-choicers say, what? Because nobody's ever asked them that. What are your exceptions? Sex selection? Ladies, which gender do you think is being aborted more when that's happening? Taxpayer-funded abortion? After 15 weeks when the fetus can feel pain, I have talked to two surgeons. They perform in vitro brain heart surgery. It's amazing. You can watch it. They do this now, and I asked them one question. I know you give anesthesia to the mother. Do you give anesthesia to the fetus? Yes. Now, why? Why do any of us get anesthesia? Because we can feel pain. So we have to stop denying science. You've got to stop the people who knew enough about science to mask up your five-year-old but can't admit what they see after a certain gestational age. So I think there are areas of consensus we can come to. And I think that if you have a party that is for sex selection abortion, abortion past the point of excruciating pain, abortion late term, and notice how I did not say and will not say and counsel clients against saying, oh, the Democrats are for abortion up until the moment of birth. You know why that's not the best way to say it? Because nobody knows anybody who knows anybody who's ever heard of anybody about to give birth and says, you know what, I don't really like stretch marks. I'm not really ready to have another person in my life. I changed my mind. Nobody knows anybody like that. So when Donald Trump says to Hillary Clinton on October 19, 2016, you would rip that baby out of its mother's womb an hour before it's being delivered, that's sort of a metaphor for, well, who's really extreme here? And people reflexively said, ooh, could that be true? And I think it changed a lot of the conversation. But I think
so. It sounds
the
like
way
this conversation in the campaign is going to be a conflict between each side accusing, highlighting the alleged extremism of the other side.
I think that's where we're already headed, but that's not where most of America is. And my entire point is, if most of America is not where the loudest, noisiest people are, you got to go to where America is. Politics 101, we don't tell Americans what's important to them and why. They tell us. And that needs to be reflected back to them. And I have one more thing to say. There have been 6 Republican presidents since 1973, since Roe versus Wade was the opinion of the United States Supreme Court. Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush, Trump. They all had the same position on abortion. I'm pro-life with the 3 exceptions. Now, you can call that
The difference is
coincidence, or you can call it causation.
But the difference in this campaign, of course, is Dobbs, right? So
right,
that's
but,
interesting. Let's move on to some other 20.
But just so I'm clear, I'm also against the state initiatives. They're 0-7. I was against them from the beginning. My firm has left millions of dollars on the table. We didn't do a single thing for any of them. I thought it was a terrible idea. It was too soon. If it took 50 years to overturn Roe versus Wade, it's going to take more than 50 minutes, 50 hours, or 50 weeks to explain to people what that means, and more importantly, what it doesn't mean, and to move hearts and minds. But this is the issue.
We don't have, we don't even have 50 minutes right now. So
we don't.
So,
but listen,
I want
them to say the word abortion. I think the media should ask them why they're not.
All right. Noted.
Brought to you by the Small Business Payments Alliance. According to a new survey, an overwhelming majority of small business owners oppose additional government regulations on the electronic payment system, as called for in the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. Don't let Durbin-Marshall pile new mandates on Main Street small businesses. Learn more at smallbusinesspaymentsalliance.com.
2024,
I know
other healthcare issues, okay?
Yes.
We were talking about this the other day. The Republican Party, since 2016, has transformed into a much more working class party. The Democrats and Republicans have shifted demographically in a major way. I'm curious if there are any issues that you think Republicans should be or are addressing, should they be rethinking when it comes to healthcare policy, given the change in the party's base?
Healthcare is the one issue that I warn Republicans, ignore it at your own peril. It may not pop in anybody's national polling right now.
When you say healthcare, what do you
mean?
Well,
I'm going to get to that. It really does mean insurance, but when people hear healthcare, it means an awful lot to them. It means access, affordability, reliability, cost of prescription drugs. It also means transparency, surprise medical billing. It's everything from long-term care, Medicare, Medicaid for elderly relatives and maybe lower-income relatives to, now we're talking about things like Ozempic being covered. We're talking about childhood diabetes. And women are the chief healthcare officers of our households. We control 2 out of every 3 healthcare dollars spent in this country. I mean, guys, I love you, but you wouldn't even go to the doctor unless we told you it was time and made the appointment for you. So, and women are also disproportionately the healthcare consumers and the healthcare providers. So the vast majority of nurses, home healthcare aides, hospice, of course, insurance claim processors when you call and get a live person. So we are at both ends of the healthcare delivery and consumption system. And if somebody says to me that, oh, but it's not high in the polls, the border is, inflation is, Ukraine is, Israel is, abortion is, whatever it is, that doesn't matter. Healthcare is always part of our congenital decision-making process.
Is there an issue? Is there, just very quickly, is there an issue that you think the Republican Party needs to rethink their approach?
They should come out with a plan. We had at the Trump White House something called Healthy America Plan, and I brought a copy of it with me backstage. We were working on that before COVID
My
hit.
My joke backstage was that this was, we finally COVID see the hit. Plan because nobody ever saw the plan when we were covering you guys.
I saw the plan. We worked really hard on it. There were people
who
worked
hidden.
A long time on that. And no, but parts of it, I'm sorry, Donald Trump expanded AHPs. We worked really hard to change the way we do kidney care, insulin. We brought the cost of insulin down. We had a big, with the insulin manufacturers.
Getting rid of Obamacare, should that be off the table for Republicans?
Doing what?
Getting rid of Obamacare.
No, I think exposing it as NPR did in 2013. And even NPR in 2013 said the biggest lie of the year was telling Americans you can keep your plan and keep your doctor.
Run on getting
Hold
rid
on,
of
this is important because people were promised that everyone would get health insurance, and that's just not true.
Right,
single
gotta,
moms like the one
up.
Who
we
raised
gotta,
me,
we
who
go.
Didn't have a college
gotta,
degree, would never have had health care, and still wouldn't. So this is what they have to
this
do.
This is a chance for a very easy question. I'm sorry to
You're
cut
just
you
interrupting
off.
Me. Okay.
I know, I apologize, but the clock is in my face.
Healthy America Plan, I have it. It's backstage.
All right, we're going to put that in the show notes on the podcast.
He also expanded short-term limited duration plans and AHPs.
At the end of Deep Dive every week, we ask the final question, which was posed by our last guest. In this case, the last guest happened to have been Katie Rogers of the New York Times. She didn't know you were going to be the guest. So here the question is, please show us the secret Trump healthcare plan. No, I'm kidding.
It's not a secret.
She asked,
we expanded telehealth too.
What does success look like in your profession, and what does it look like to you? And then I want you to give us a question for next week's guest, who we don't know who that's going to be.
I'll say my profession is as a pollster, market researcher, data analytics, fully recovered attorney. So in that profession, I think particularly here in Washington, success is judged by how many races your clients win and how much money you make. And I've done plenty and plenty. I've had great success. I'm a very blessed person. I still always did and still do define success as, because I'm a pollster, I think one of the last touchstones we have to the American people and their voice and their choice is scientifically sound, artistically smart polling and focus groups and data analytics. Why? Because that's where they tell you how they feel and who they are, what their aspirations are, their frustrations, what's most important to them and why. Rather than get asking silly questions like right direction, wrong track, or Trump or Biden, those will take care of themselves and those will change over time. But what won't change over time is how worried you are about healthcare or what you think about inflation or crime or Ukraine or Israel, et cetera. So I would say success is there is judged by how much we're able to reflect, to collect, and then reflect back to the people their will, their ideas. And when you can share that with opinion leaders and elected officials and tell them, look, this is what the people are saying is most important to them, and particularly their forgotten man and forgotten woman.
I got to get going here, but how about a question for next week's guest?
Next week's guest, and I don't know who it is?
No. I don't even know who it is.
I'll revert to the if you weren't doing this and you weren't living in Washington, D.C., what would you be doing and where would you live?
Hilariously, that was a question from 2 weeks ago, but it's a good
See,
question.
See, I don't know. So keep going. I don't know these things.
Kelly,
I just
revealed very, very
that
much.
I don't listen to your podcast, but I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
Okay. And then.
And that's our show. Our producer is Kara Tabor. Our senior producer is Alex Keeney. I'm Ryan Lizza, host and executive producer of Deep Dive. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Tell us what you think about the show or who you'd like to hear on Deep Dive. You can always email me at rlizza@politico.com. And please subscribe to Playbook Deep Dive wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.